everyone, this is Molly Douthat.
And David Douthat.
Welcome to More Than Hearing, a podcast to encourage preachers to use multiple intelligences in sermons and worship leadership, because there are plenty of ways to reach someone's soul.
Today's podcast will cover the lectionary readings for Year A, the 14th Sunday in Ordinary Time. This Genesis story about finding Rebecca is pretty thin on theological meatiness, to be honest, but Romans 7 more than makes up for it. Jesus also addresses a famine of faith in Matthew and goes on to make one of the richest offers we've ever heard. Preaching can be all or nothing too, so we hope to help with our illustrations and special effects.
We have established this podcast based on Dr. Howard Gardner's theory of multiple intelligences. Dr. Gardner suggests that there are multiple ways to learn, process, remember, and understand our world. Each week, we develop illustrations and special effects for the weekly readings of the Revised Common Lectionary and use various smarts based on Dr. Gardner's identified intelligences. We call them word smart, eye smart, math smart, body smart, music smart, nature smart, people smart, and self smart. If you'd like to, you can read more about Dr. Gardner's work by clicking on the link at the top of our webpage.
As we read and reflect on the scripture passages for each week, we explore ways these intelligences can be utilized for a deeper appreciation of God's Word. Anytime and any way we make use of the different smarts, we give people greater access to the Word of God, so they can acquire it, process it, and internalize it in ways that make sense to them. So let's get started.
The Old Testament lesson for Year A, Ordinary 14, is from Genesis chapter 24, and if you want to tell the entire story, it's the entire chapter of 24. But the lectionary begins at verse 34, runs through to 38, takes a jump to 42 through to 49, and then jumps again from 58 through 67, the end of the chapter. The lectionary kind of is doing the highlights of Abraham's servant, as Abraham's servant has been commissioned by his master Abraham to go and find a wife for his son Isaac among his kinfolk from his old homeland, because Abraham does not want Isaac marrying any of the Canaanites around whom they are living. Abraham wants Isaac to marry from the family, and so sends his servant with an oath, I was looking at some Hebrew commentaries, and they said it was a dread oath. So it was an important oath. It's like the dread pirate Roberts. Yes. It was a dread oath. So we pick up the story in verse 34 with the servant in the home of Bethuel, Rebecca's father, explaining what has happened at the well, that he came in hot and dusty from this journey from Canaan and said to the Lord God, "Okay, I'm here. Now what?" Essentially. And he said, let the woman who comes to the well, because he figured that was probably a good place to meet women. When she says, when I ask for a drink, and she says, "Here, you have a drink, and I'll also water your camels." That was for him going to be the sign that this is the person that he wants to pursue as a potential wife for his master's son, because she's considerate and generous and strong, too. Well, big water jars, watering all those camels. So David and I disagree as to what we can find in this particular story. He thinks we should have just skipped it and concentrated on Romans and Matthew. But I think there is some stuff. You would have to spend probably a lot of time with it and take it kind of like taking a rug outside and beating it a little bit to get all the stuff out of it, because it doesn't present itself immediately, except for in a couple of places. And we're going to talk about those in Word Smart with an illustration and special effect, in Eye Smart with an illustration and special effect, and an illustration in Body Smart. So, David, take it away.
Okay, so it's a lengthy story, and it takes place kind of around the fireplace, you can imagine. So it's like when the family gets together and you tell the family stories. So we're thinking of it in those terms of it's family history. There are facts, there are dates, there are places, there are people, but there's definitely some color that's been added to the story, and it probably gets embellished every time it gets told. So just thinking of it in those terms would be a way to illustrate what's going on in the story, is to talk about telling family stories and how that process happens. And, oh, yeah, this is how your mother and I met. And then you have a 10-season television show about it. Wait a minute. No. So there's that. And then for special effect, to kind of bring that out some more, you could do it as a reader's theater. So you have a narrator and you have the different characters read by different people. And you'd have some movement, maybe.
If you wanted to.
Yeah. You could have some movement. So doing it as a reader's theater, and we'll try and get a script up for you. The other would be to tell it as if it were a family story that you were telling. And so have the kids gather around or whatever, you know, and say, oh, I remember when. So it would take a little bit of paraphrasing, perhaps, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. do it like that so people would get the feeling.
Of it being a story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, by doing this as a dramatic reading, reader's theater, or by presenting it dramatically as if you were telling the family story, you're also bringing some people smart elements into it. So you get the bonus of two intelligences this way, not just word, but two also people.
Well, for iSmart, there are some visual or spatial, anyway, particularly elements to this story. The one obvious one is the distance traveled between Hebron and Haran. We have a link to a map for that, and you can use that as a special effect. Break out the maps. That's always a great one when you have stories of journeys in Scripture. You know, just get the maps out. Let people see how far that was. You know, and so this servant, he's got all this time traveling to where he's going to say, how am I going to do this?
Yeah, because we figured it was somewhere between 500 and 600 miles.
Yeah, right? And on foot, that takes, how long did we say that?
It's about a fortnight's travel.
Okay, yeah.
20 days, give or take three.
Right. So so a long time for the servant to try to come up with some kind of plan. And the best one he had was go to the well. But, you know, that's the gathering spot, so why not? Mm-hmm. Anyway, so is another illustration. I found a 2007 article in the British newspaper called The Telegraph that was talking about an intended pilgrim trail that was going to run essentially that journey, but kind of in reverse from where Abraham began down to Hebron. The planned pathway was roughly about 750 miles. Google Maps says the distance is 530, so they were obviously going to be, you know, wending their way around the countryside a little bit. But it was going to go through Turkey, through Syria, Lebanon, Jordan, Israel, and ending in Hebron. It's very likely that this did not take place because 4 years later was the Arab Spring and all the shooting that's now happening in Syria. So if this particular pilgrimage path has been begun, it's probably been suspended.
Oh, yeah.
You would be going right through all of the places that are rubble now, which would be an interesting pilgrimage.
It would, but not a very safe one.
Pretty darn dangerous. Yeah.
Yeah.
So for another special effect you could do, we have a couple other things. Bring in some flashy gold jewelry. You can get them at party supply stores or craft stores. As the bling that the servant brought out and gave to Rebecca to show to her and to her family that he was serious about this and that the person to whom he wanted to take her was a wealthy person and she was going to be okay. And also I found on a website, Chabad.org, it is a Torah study website, has a picture of Isaac praying in the field. It's very colorful. It reminds me of Joseph and his coat of the next generations on. Just a very colorful picture of Isaac out in the field praying and being on his own when the servant and Rebecca showed up. It's quite lovely.
So for Body Smart, thinking about the scene that happens here at the well where the servant is waiting for whatever woman it is that's supposed to come along. Choosing the well, I mean, that's a place where you knew you could find women coming because it was women's work to get the water.
Right.
So there's that. But the idea of coming to the watering hole, as it were, to get a drink and to meet women, the well also is important as just a place to get water. And he's been on a long journey and expects it to continue in some regard.
And they got to go back.
Yeah. And so he needs to stop and get some water. And so do his fellow servants and camels and everybody else. So if you've ever made the trek across the American plains, and particularly in the summer, you know that it gets pretty, one, boring, two, dry and hot. And,
yeah, and sometimes dusty.
And sometimes dusty. And so a long journey, you get to thinking about water. And so back in 1936, in South Dakota, in a town called Wall, they started advertising for a drugstore there by putting out signs on the highway saying free ice water. And that became Wall Drug. Well, it was Wall Drug, but that was the beginning of the legend of Wall Drug and what it is now. People would go out of their way to go to this Wall Drug store and get a glass of ice water. This was before air conditioning and all mm-hmm. that sort of thing. So we were put in mind of that kind of experience
right.
with the servants stopping in at the well. And if you go to Wall Drug now, and we have the link for Wall Drug in the show notes at morethanhearing.org. If you go there now, it's an enormous complex with all manner of kitschy sorts of
touristy yeah.
things and attractions.
Pretty good food.
But there's also the restaurant, and they still give you free ice water.
Yes, they do.
So, and we put that in body because of that
the
hydration
idea of
sort of thing, thirst and,
right.
and hot and dry and all.
Right. All right, let's go on.
The epistle lesson for Year A, Ordinary 14, is Romans chapter 7, verses 13 through 25. Continuing to plow our way through Romans here, and it is this ongoing logical development of his argument about what faith does for us and what works doesn't do for us, and rhetorical questions throughout that he's trying to address how folks have understood their freedom from the law.
Mm-hmm.
And so he starts off again here, well, okay, so did the law, which is good, then make me do what is bad? Did it bring death to me? Well, no, because it's not that. It's sin that's made me do what's bad. And you probably are very familiar with chapter 7 if you're a preacher, because it comes up regularly, for one. And most of us, I would venture to say, identify pretty closely with this passage. This is where Paul is going back and forth and talking about the thing that I want to do is the thing that I can't, and the thing that I don't want to do is the thing I find myself doing. And it's sin at work in my body, making me do all of these things against the law that I love, the law of God. Just back and forth and back and forth. And so wrestling with this, and who will save me from this body of death? And thanks be to God who saves us in Jesus Christ. But still, with my mind, I'm a slave to the law of God, but with my flesh, I'm a slave to the law of sin. So much to wrestle with here. So we're going to wrestle with some of it. Okay, so we're going to look at iSmart with an illustration. We have MathSmart illustration and special effect, a couple special effects in BodySmart, and illustrations in SelfSmart. And for the other things, you can look at the worksheet that you'll find at the show notes at morethanhearing.org. But Molly's going to start us off on the iSmart stuff.
Yes. In Paul's theology, sin is not necessarily a moral failing, although it can be. But for him, sin is much more a fundamental, pervasive force or power.
He really anthropomorphizes it.
That's the word. Anthropomorphizes it. Yes, it's a force that, but it's set against God, and it's set against God's creation, which includes us. And since we're kind of at the top of the food chain of that creation, we're sort of the pinnacle of that creation. We get targeted the most, and because we get targeted the most, the rest of creation suffers because we're supposed to be caring for it, and when we don't care for it, there you go. That's the theology of that. And the reason we put this in visual smart is because Paul wants you to be able to see this. He wants you to be able to envision this power working against individuals and bodies of Christians. And so that got us to thinking about that really irritating commercial for an irritable bowel medication that's on the market. There's this lovely woman who's trying to live her life, and she's got this perky, redheaded, irritable colon that is her companion who keeps derailing her because, hi, I'm going to show up and make your life miserable. It's a very effective commercial in illustrating the debilitating effects of irritable bowel syndrome, but it's also a pretty good way of looking at the idea of sin. It shows up and it says, nope, you're not going to do that wonderful thing that you thought you were going to do. You're going to do this awful thing. And you might have to go see your doctor. So it's kind of also a body smart as well.
Okay, for math smart, math logic, we're thinking about the logic here. And for Paul, the law has revealed the sinfulness in the world and in us. Adam and Eve would not have thought to touch the tree of knowledge if they hadn't been told, don't touch the tree of knowledge. And so William Loder, who's one of our favorite guys, and we've got a link for this quote, says, human nature, when it is twisted by sin, takes the commandments to serve its own ends so that commands end up not preventing, but rather prompting sin. And so it's that paradox. If you don't know a thing's illegal, then you won't have any desire to do it. And as soon as you find out it is, that's the thing you want to do. We found an illustration of this paradox in Star Trek fandom. Even if you're not really familiar with Star Trek, you probably know the characters Kirk and Spock, captain of the Enterprise Kirk and his first officer Spock. Kirk is the
impulsive,
emotionally driven, energetic character, and Spock is logic and let's think this out and very reserved. And so somebody thought about the entire program and said, you can summarize the whole show this way. Spock says, Captain, do not do the thing. And Kirk says, I must do the thing. And so we've got a couple of versions of that in text and graphic form that you can take a look at. So that dynamic is kind of what Paul's getting at here. Then we have a couple more demonstrations of that, and more or less special effect because they're on video. It's some children, some babies who are just learning about this no business.
Yes. What is that word?
What is this that you keep saying to me? And so we have a couple of videos of children who are being told, don't touch that. And they're just fascinated by wanting to touch it.
Yes.
And one of them actually.
I'm not supposed to touch.
Yeah. One of them actually was a winner on America's Funniest Home Videos. It's a little child reaching for a water glass and mom is just, no, reach and look, no, reach and look and no. And it's hilarious.
It becomes a game.
It is. Mm-hmm. And then the other is a video of a baby who's been told, don't touch this, and is just standing right in front of it, staring at it, reaching out toward it and not touching it, but just standing there for minutes.
And actually putting her arms behind herself.
Yeah. Well, she goes kind of back and forth on that. It's like, I really will know. And so there you go. So the reverse or the conflicted logic of the law.
For Body Smart, we have a couple of options for a special effect that you can do to demonstrate this passage. One thing is, as the passage is read, every time people hear the word I used in this passage, raise their hands. And by the time you get through this passage, people are going to wind up with a really good workout because Paul uses the word I several times. The Greek form, ego, 8 times. Wow. And in English, it gets translated I even more frequently because he's using the first person singular of verbs. And so when we translate that into English, it is I. So the Greek form is 8 times. The English form is however many times he uses a verb.
Yeah. Which is lots.
A lot, yeah. So have people raise their hands when they hear the word I, and if one arm gets tired, have them switch to the other one, and if they're really tired, have their friends help them.
Yeah, it's really interesting because in the Greek, they rarely use...
He hardly ever use ego.
Ego.
Yeah, he's really emphasizing.
Yeah.
Actually, for Word Smart, go look that up.
Yeah. And there's some debate about why he does that, whether it's that he is actually...
speaking autobiographically?
Confessing this as part of his own life, or whether he is doing it dramatically as the idealized sinner wrestling.
The every person.
Yeah.
Right.
It works out either way.
Yeah. Okay, so anything, so, another special effect for Body Smart. This would be an interesting way of illustrating the struggle is to have something set up when you're up front. You've got a project, writing a letter, building something with blocks, working on a hobby, eating a sandwich, whatever. Have it set up near the pulpit then. And as you talk about this particular thing that you want to do and you move to do it, have somebody come up and repeatedly hinder you or even drag you away from it. It's kind of like that irritable bowel commercial. I want to go do this. No, you can't do that. You have to do this. You're going to, and if you want to have some interesting experiment with that, have them introduce you to do something that you don't want to do. Have some fun with that. That's also kind of got a people and self-smart element in it as well.
Which brings us around to self-smart. So looking at a couple of these verses, verse 15 says, I do not understand my own actions. What I do not want is the very thing I do, and that's the very thing I hate. And then in verse 20, if I do what I do not want, it is no longer I that do it, but sin that dwells in me. So I got to thinking about this, and I had read a book some time ago, and I don't remember exactly what it was. But anyway, somewhere I read that the subconscious mind reacts seriously faster and with more energy in its impulses than the conscious mind does.
Is that because it's the lizard brain?
I think. Yeah.
Yeah. So fight or flight is pretty, that's fast.
Yeah. Right. And so it's the habits that we form and the activities that we do over and over again. Once we learn to do them adequately, then they get shifted to the subconscious. And so you don't have to consciously think about driving your car or cutting your bagel or, you know, whatever it is. You have a subroutine.
That takes over
and lets you do it without thinking. The problem is that it's such a powerful system that the conscious thought doesn't really have energy to overtake that. And that's why it's so hard to break a bad habit, is because it's just, it's like...
you're doing it before you realize you're doing it.
Yeah. And even if you consciously say, I do not want to do this...
You're already doing it.
You're going to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there are days when I think I'm going to change the pattern of my morning. Instead of getting up and having breakfast first, I'm going to get up and shower first. And I can say that every day of the week, and it doesn't change. Because by the time I realize that, oh, I meant to do that, I said I was going to do that last night, I'm done with my breakfast. So I got to thinking about this as the psychology of this chapter and wondered if anybody had really dug into it. And I found an article that has the text from chapter 7 on one side and then the psychological language describing the same thing on the right side. And it's really fascinating. And you have to know a little bit of psychology.
Right.
To know what they're talking about. But if you do, then it's pretty cool to see how it works itself out. So we have a link to that article in the worksheet, and it'll be in the show notes. Okay, let's go on.
The gospel passage for year A, ordinary 14, is Matthew chapter 11, verses 16 through 19, skipping over verses 20 through 24, and then jumping back in at 25 through 30. Looking at this particular passage, particularly the way that we have it divvied up on the page in front of us, there are four sections that you can preach on. The first section is verses 16 through 19, where Jesus is giving a comparison, sort of a mini parable of comparison between himself and his cousin John the Baptist, and how people looked at John and the way he lived his life and Jesus and the way he lives his life, and how both of them were totally ignored.
And rejected.
So you can look at that section and you can do a lot with just that if you chose to. The second section is the part that the lectionary cuts out. We actually came up with four smarts that might connect to this particular passage. Since we're not actually doing those, we put those at the end of the worksheet at the show notes. So if you want to see what we did with that, go take a look and see if that might be something that you might consider putting back into the reading. Then we have Jesus saying a prayer, thanking God that the things of heaven have been hidden from the intelligence and the wise ones, but revealed to the infants. And the infants in Greek is a word that can also be translated as the non-speaking ones. So it doesn't have to just be babies. It might be people who are incapable of speech, which is an interesting thought for body and nature. And then finally ends with the three verses that people just love, and you always hear it at funerals. Come to me, all you that are weary and carrying heavy burdens. I will give you rest. And on and on. We have some thoughts about that one for body and self-smart. And we have some stuff for music smart as well. So we're going to look just at those three intelligences for the sections that the lectionary says do. So we're going to do an illustration and special effect in body smart, an illustration and special effect in music smart, and an illustration and special effect in self smart. So get us going there, dear.
Okay. For body smart, looking at verses 29 to 30, which is taking on the yoke of Jesus. And so we have a couple of links for you on human pulled plows and discussion thereof. What would it be to wear that yoke as you're doing that work? And you would think that that would make things difficult to wear that yoke, but Jesus says, no, it doesn't work that way. Continuing to think about the lifting of burdens here, we have a couple of websites that talk about the OSHA recommendations, the Occupational Safety and Hazards Administration recommendations for safe heavy lifting of objects and how you
get a forklift.
Well, that's on the list actually. So, but different ideas about safe ways to carry a burden, and also some guidelines for safe lifting, pulling, and pushing for people working in healthcare.
Right. Yeah, that's an industry that really wrecks your back up if you don't know how you're doing that when you're helping people get in and out of bed and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's not just lifting, but there's twisting and
right.
and pushing and pulling
right.
all at once. So some guidelines for that. Then for special effect, going along with that same part of the passage, get a wheelbarrow's worth of big heavy rocks or something equivalent.
Bricks.
Yeah, or bags of softener salt, you know, so heavy load. That's what we're looking for here anyway. Put it in a box or on a tarp or something on the floor in the sanctuary, and then ask a volunteer to move it across the floor and see how they do. And then connect a harness to it and a yoke, if you will. And you can maybe use rope or webbed straps, nylon straps, those sorts of things.
Harness.
And then you'll have to figure this out ahead of time and test it out to see, to make sure that this all works. But it should be a lot easier to pull it with a yoke on than just trying to push it across the floor.
Or grab it with your hands and pull it.
Or grab it and, you know, you'll hurt your back if you try and pull it across, right? So that's a way of understanding a yoke as being a helpful way of moving your load. And then we have a couple of videos that show some really neat designs of two-person straps for moving heavy objects, for moving furniture and stuff. And they're really cool. And you see these people whipping the furniture around, you know, and they're carrying these enormous things up the stairs. And so there you go.
Okay. For Music Smart, we're looking at verses 16 through 19, right at the beginning of this passage. They're like children in the marketplace saying, we played the flute for you and you wouldn't play wedding. We played the flute for you and you wouldn't play funeral. And so since they wouldn't play each other's games, they just don't play games at all. So do you have anyone like this in your church? And we've put this in Music Smart because if you're going to have a fight in your church, it's going to be over the music. Because you're going to have a certain group of people that are going to say, don't pick those dirgy hymns. They're all dreary and they're hard to sing. And then you might have other people say, oh, don't pick those praise songs. They're vapid and they're repetitive. And don't expect me to clap my hands.
And it might be the same people.
It could very well be. It could very well be.
They have a set of four hymns that they want to sing every week.
Exactly. Yes, those old, the good old hymns, right. Yeah. You can maybe pick some particular songs out of your hymnal or your music repertoire and say, This might be an example of a funeral song. This might be an example of a play wedding song, and contrast them, and you know, just to see how people react to them and kind of give them a chance to see musically the difference. And so for a special effect, if you have musicians that you are working with, ask them to prepare a really peppy dance number and a funeral dirge to play as you read or as you discuss these verses, and then contemplate the reactions of the people that Jesus was talking about.
Yeah. So it's not all about the music for Jesus, but it's a good way in.
Yeah.
Going on to self-smart, this invitation of Jesus to be vulnerable, really, and to admit, hey, I'm having a hard time carrying this load, or I'd really rather not have to carry this load anymore, or I could use some rest. Jesus seems to welcome that vulnerability and doesn't seem afraid of it. That's hard to admit in American culture in particular. If you're going through a hard thing, then what people seem to value most is if you're being strong going through that.
Right.
And so
brave.
Yeah, brave and not breaking down. And or people will avoid coming to church because they're afraid of getting weepy about things that they're dealing with, you know, and that seems to be exactly the opposite of what Jesus is inviting us to do. It's hard. Come on, let me help you with that. So we have a quote for you. It says, Jesus seems to want to teach us to offer this inner poverty to God. And that comes from comments on the Bible from the Tezei community. And we'll have a link to that in the show notes. And then for special effect, giving your folks some things to reflect on. And that's what self-smart's about, is getting inside your own heart and mind. So again, with verses 28 and 29, those same places, remember a time when you felt unburdened after a hard stretch of work. Think about how it felt in your body and your mind and your spirit. And so then when you hear Jesus' offer of rest and a light burden, how does that feel? And how does it feel like that experience? And what burdens are you carrying for which you want Jesus' Sabbath rest? And what will it take for you to take Jesus up on his offer?
That's it for today's podcast. Please ask questions or leave us a comment on our website, www.morethanhearing.org, or at our Facebook page, facebook.com/morethanhearing, or give us a tweet at morethanhearing, or you can email us at connect@morethanhearing.org. If you try any of these suggestions, or maybe you get an idea that you like even better than ours, please let us know what you did and how it went. We would really love to hear how using this theory has made a difference in your preaching and worship preparation.
Be sure to look for the show notes, links, and resources on our website. We publish our worksheets on each text so that you can see some of our ideas that didn't make it into the podcast. They could be helpful and give you a spark. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast using the iTunes, Android, or RSS links at the bottom of the show notes, or point your podcatching software at morethanhearing.org/feed/podcast. You can find us on the iTunes store too, and you can subscribe there directly. If you like the show, you can help us by writing a review at iTunes, as it helps other people find us more easily, and also by sharing the show with your friends and colleagues. We'll be back with another installment next week, so in the meantime, stay subscribed
and be smart.
The number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
This is a Whippet Good production.
Human nature, when it
no, you can't. The thing you want to do, you can't do.
The very thing I can't.